How do you build a high-performance team? That's the question that all leaders grapple with. The challenge in today's environment is that you're told to pull this off on a shoestring budget and that you have to exceed previous year's production. It's an impossible task. Here's how this show helps. Every week, we're going to feature executive and senior leaders from HR, IT, and sales, and they're going to share their best practices and playbooks so you can empower your managers to build great teams. We are Engaging Leadership, and now, here's the show. Thanks for joining us today. This is your friendly neighborhood talent strategy nerd, Dr. Jim. Development isn't an activity that's just reserved for the C-suite and senior leadership. In fact, every layer of an organization should have a culture of development that's embedded within the organization. The development mindset and culture is what gets your leadership engaged and then helps that leadership mobilize the team. So what are the keys to pulling this off? In order to build engaging leadership and motivated teams, you need to lean into authenticity that's informed by data and openness at the center of how you show up. That's the argument that Joseph Varner, Chief People Officer at Woodside Homes, makes. So what's Joseph's story? Joseph, or JV, is a human capital professional who's been in the space for over 25 years, touching everything from the publishing sector all the way to industrials. He's had experience working in the film industry at New Line Cinema. He's worked on projects such as The Lord of the Rings and Sex and the City. He's worked on Pan's Labyrinth. And he's continued that experience, having held HR leadership roles with Elizabeth Arden. So needless to say, he's had a broad range of experience across a number of different industries. He's currently in the SVP of People role and culture at Woodside Homes, which is a national home builder based in Phoenix, Arizona. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you on. If I'm thinking about the different guests that we've had on the show, you're the first one from this particular space in the home building space that we've had on the show. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to your perspective, but I think you're going to bring an interesting overall view into the discussion just because of the diversity of experience across many different sectors that you've had. So before we dive into the conversation and we talk about how you engage leadership so that they can empower and build high-performing teams, I think it's important for you to loop the listeners into some more of your story that's going to help inform this conversation.
First of all, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on. I really value the work that you do, and I'm honored to be on your podcast here. With regards to my background and some of the things that I've done, I've been very fortunate to have tapped into many different industries and have done many different things. I learned early on in my career that in order for me to truly be successful in what I'm doing in my role, I have to truly understand the nuts and bolts of the business. So I've always looked at what I'm doing beyond my current role. I want to get in and understand what every person within the organization is doing, what keeps them up at night. And that helps me figure out how I need to create a plan for the organization and drive the business forward. So my background, you touched on it before, it spans media, publishing, spirits, and most recently, I am in the wonderful world of home building construction, which is a new field for me. But regardless of the types of industries that I've been in, the core premise is always there. How do you create value for the organization? How do you create programs that lock in the business goals of your organization and drive those forward? With my years of experience, has helped me tie all of those pieces together. So I'm really excited to do some of the great work that we're doing right now.
This is a completely new industry for you. And when you look at entering a new industry, walk us through some of the things or some of the steps that you took to get yourself up to speed working in a completely new sector. What was your process like for accomplishing that?
Learn the organization. I've never been in a situation where if I don't know something, I pretend that I do, if that makes sense. So coming into this industry, I had to basically put my hand up to everyone and say, listen, this industry, I don't. So I'm going to ask a lot of questions and I'm going to take lots and lots of notes. And ultimately, I will get there. But just walk me through the operations of the industry. And let's talk about the history of the industry. And I've had some fantastic mentors within my current role right now who've been able to do that. And of course, as time goes on, you ultimately begin to understand and know the organization. And I've applied that within all industries. I didn't know beauty when I got into beauty. Now I know how to create skincare and perfume. I didn't know media. Now I know how to, I know how magazines are put together. I know how to, I didn't know spirits. Now I understand how those products work as well. So I apply the same type of format into any industry that I'm going in. And I think we all should be able to do that as well.
When you translate that into really tactical items that you should be doing in a 30, 60, 90 day period within a new industry, what are some of those key pillars that you want people to have on their radar so that they're getting themselves equipped to function well within that new industry?
First thing again is listening, meeting as many stakeholders as you can. So your first 30 days, you are literally back-to-back-to-back meetings, understanding the business, understanding all of the roles within the organization. And then from there, you begin to decipher where the organization is today, where we're trying to go tomorrow, and who are the pivotal people in the current roles that's essentially going to get us there. But it's about listening and understanding the business. It doesn't matter how much experience I have in my industry, I have to go in with all of my meetings with my hand held out to the leadership team, to the employees, essentially saying, listen, this is an opportunity for you to walk me through your world, your role. What keeps you up at night? What are the things that you're proud of? What are the things that you want to see? What are the things that you want to do? And then once you build that trust with the business, then it's going to start to multiply very rapidly. So that's the first thing that you do. Then the, like I said, the 60-day mark is really be tied to your leadership team. In my case, my C, as well as my executive board. What are the goals? What are the things that you essentially want to get done? And then let's matrix that out and put the plan together to essentially get that done. And my job is to have a realistic time frame of how it's going to work, walking the organization through the process of what we're going to do and how the pieces are going to essentially come together. And then of course, execute and implement that. And then once you begin to get that buy-in, once the organization and the leadership team sees that, okay, he's actually moving the needle here, then you can, again, building that trust, then more projects begin to land on your plate or your phone rings a bit more all hours of the day because folks trust your ability and the advice that you would like to provide to them.
One of the things I think when we're thinking about embedding a development culture at all layers of the organization, it's not an easy thing to do for any industry. Now, I'm not overly familiar, I'm not familiar at all with the home building industry. So tell me a little bit more about what makes this particular industry unique, and that will give us a good springboard into the conversation about how you build a development culture within that industry.
We build homes, right? Your home is either probably the largest investment that anyone will make in their life, in their lifetime. So we value all of the work that's put into that home. And it's a 2-year process from finding the land to build the home on to building, essentially. So we want to make sure that customers who purchase our products, our homes, truly believe and value the work that we put into that home. And it spans many different industries. It spans many different sectors, from your engineers to your construction men and women who are actually building it, your framers. We have trades, the design process, you have the sales side of it. So there's many different pieces that have to come together for it to work. The industry is not necessarily different than other product-driven industries in that we're all trying to create something that the consumer wants. However, in this particular industry, it's a big price tag to what you're trying to do, and you can be there for up to 30 years. So we want to make sure that the homes that we build are safe, they are effective, they're user-friendly for you and your family or yourself as you embark on your journey of life in your space. It requires lots of collaboration, lots of communication to make sure that the right hand is essentially talking to the left hand. And once it all comes together, it's a beautiful and unique thing.
When you look at industrials or construction, and I think about people strategy within that space, I always get the impression that it's more of a transactional environment. Now, we're having a conversation about building a development culture at all levels of the organization. So I think one of the things that I'm curious about is if, in fact, the sector that you work in from a people strategy perspective tends to be a little bit more transactional, how do you get the buy-in to embark on this development journey when it might not be something that they're even used to as an industry or as a company?
Regardless of the industry that you're in or the commodity that you are moving, every organization wants the best employees, and every organization wants employees who feel valued, who are connected to the work that they're doing and are coming to work every day, showing up, they are being their authentic self and being the best that they can be. If we're talking about development, means many different things for many different sectors. If I'm dealing with construction men and women, development may be on the safety side, just making sure that folks are able to go home after climbing roofs all day safely. If we're transitioning to the sales sector, development means interpersonal skills and making sure that people are able to connect with a plethora of buyers that come in from all over the world and being able to understand the various nuances that that buyer may have to the products that we're trying to sell. And of course, you have your standard corporate employees as well, who development could look like soft skills development to hard skills development, whatever the case may be. So I think in my organization, the wonderful thing about Woodside is my business is pulling versus pushing. So once I'm able to communicate the types of things that we can provide our employees and the employees are asking for this, then the leadership team and the executive team understands it, and they get it. So for me, I haven't had to kick the door down, if you will, to get my group to understand the importance of development. This was a situation of, okay, we know we need something. Help us frame out what that looks like for the various different employees that we currently have.
Let's dig into that a little bit, because one of the dynamics that I would imagine is pretty challenging is building a cohesive development and talent strategy for both field-based teams and corporate teams. So what was your process for not only doing that, but also identifying what the areas of focus should be for those two distinct groups of employees that you're serving?
The first thing I had to do was just identify what does good look like. And let's take the variability out of that particular question. So let's create a process in which we can identify essentially what good looks like. So I developed a leadership framework, a competency framework that essentially shows and discusses and details exactly that. So now our business has a blueprint of what good looks like. And then from there, we're able to identify strengths and gaps within our employee base. And then that's where the development pieces tie in. Once we took the variability out of essentially just what good looks like, then we were able to really create some concrete development actions based off of the various roles that we have within the organization. So that was the first thing that I needed to do and I had to do, and just create that framework, walk the leadership team through the framework, how it's going to work, how do we apply it, and then walk the organization through it, which again, they were hungry for it. So it wasn't a situation of folks with their arms crossed. I'm not doing this mumble jumble stuff, whatever. This was, okay, finally, we have something. This is what we've been waiting for. Thank you for putting this together. Now let's move the needle with it.
I like the point that you made about defining what good looks like and reducing the variability in what kind of answers that you can get. And you touched on this a little bit. I would anticipate in a field versus corporate environment for you to encounter some roadblocks or at least some resistance from the field team on this stuff, because their focus is we got to build houses, we got to drive delivery. How did you overcome that potential resistance? Because it's taking away from like the core job. So what was your process for getting over that?
I think everyone truly wants to be developed, even if you are in the field and you may not be a computer user daily, but everyone wants to grow. I've never had a person say that they don't want to grow. I might have to approach that population a bit different than I may approach a completely different population within the organization, but the core message is still there. We value you. We want you to be the best that you can be, and we want to continue to advance you throughout the organization. When the company across the street knocks on your door and offers you another position, you say, no, I'm going to stay here because I see a future for me here. And that's how I'm able to keep folks within the organization, and they create, you know, programs from there. It was never a situation of course, you have one or two a small minority of folks who may not understand how this works. They just want to work, and not everyone is chasing the carrot, but for the most part, the majority of the organization understands it and gets it. And then they begin to see their colleagues and their peers around them succeeding. Everyone wants to do better and everyone wants to do well. One way of doing that is just develop yourself.
Wow, it's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact Community, where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show. So I want to wind this back a little bit. Our entire conversation has been focused on development at all levels. When I zoom out, one of the things that I'm curious about with you being new in this industry, new in this company, and you landed on development as the area of emphasis that you wanted to focus on, what existed within the environment that signaled to you that development is the thing that you should focus on versus, let's say, compensation and benefits or total rewards or some other element of the employee life cycle or HR? Why did you land on development as the primary lever that you wanted to focus on as you're working through this transformation?
It all starts there. So when we talk about how do we attract the best people, how do we retain the best people, it all starts with development. When we talk about the high turnover, it all starts with development. When we talk about salary parity, it all starts with development. When we talk about advancement, promotions, it all starts. So that's the anchor for people in culture, for human capital, is developing employees coming in the door and the folks that we currently have. And then from there, it's a springboard. You can go anywhere once folks truly understand their value personally, as well as the work that they're doing for the organization. You could do anything, but we have to get that piece done. We have to stand this up within the organization. And my company didn't have a program before, so it was just a lot of kind of just not understanding why there was such high turnover. And unfortunately, in some pockets of the business, they just got used to it being a high turnover. And you say, it doesn't have to be that way. Let's create pathways for employees that they can see themselves being within the business for X amount of years or putting a career within the organization. So we don't have that high turnover ordinance, or our employee relations cases went completely down. Our EAP calls went completely down because folks are starting to feel value in the work that they're doing. Again, it all starts with development.
I like that you're anchoring a lot of different business outcomes under development. And I think if I'm thinking about your answer, it feeds into some of the things that I regularly talk about, is that when you're thinking about your talent strategy, you have to figure out how to grow your own. And the reason why you have to figure out how to grow your own is because it's cheaper to keep and develop your own talent than go out to the market and find some. So if you're looking at development as an anchor for your overall talent strategy as a hedge against keeping your personnel costs down, it obviously makes sense. And especially when you look at the numbers on turnover. Mm-hmm. Now, I get that from a corporate strategy perspective and a corporate execution perspective, but you and I both know that the success or failure of that effort is going to sit with your first and second line managers, whether they're in corporate or in the field. So when you're looking at building this development culture, how did you bring that to life at the director and manager level, both in field and corporate, so that this has staying power and actually starts moving the needle on those outcomes that you're looking to drive?
So for me, it started with the leader, the COO of the organization. If the president or CEO of the organization isn't bought in to what you're trying to do, it's not going to work. Specifically was him bringing me into the organization. So from a leadership team perspective, before I roll anything out, I want to get their buy-in. So I will walk them through what this could potentially look like. I've connected with you all. We've had many conversations. This is going to solve some of the challenges that you're facing within your teams. You want to get out into the field and build houses. I understand that. And unfortunately, there are times when you haven't been able to do that, because you've been focused on all of this noise that's been going on within your groups. This is one way that we can essentially solve some of those issues and tap down that noise. And once I roll the initiative out to the leadership team, I get their buy-in, what's working, what doesn't work. Does this timing work? I can tweak it a little bit. And then I would use one of the divisions as a guinea pig before I roll it out to the entire organization. I want to reach out to you all. This is what we're trying to do. I want your feedback. Let's test it. Let's break it. Let's see if it works. Does this fit this group? And then we can modify it and change it. And then from there, I roll it out to the organization. So once I do it in that fashion, I have many stakeholders who have had their hands into the process. So this is not just a initiative from HR or people in culture. Now I have buy-in, collective buy-in from many stakeholders, half the organization. Where it gets out that this is a really interesting thing. We're doing something over here. Wait till it gets over there. So then I get phone calls like, we heard about what you're doing. When are you hitting my division? When are you coming up here? When are you coming to California to work with us? When are you coming to Utah to work with us, et cetera, et cetera. So I use the business to help me build the momentum to the initiative that we're trying to roll out.
So if I'm thinking about your process and building a framework out of it, step one was to get executive sponsorship and buy-in on a particular direction, work with that group to build out the strategy, then pilot it within a division. So that pilot has to go through a manager or director and iterate from that piloting process and then expand out. Am I getting the core elements correctly?
Correct.
I'm pretty sure this came up. How did you deal with those situations where the strategy was built at the executive level and you're trying to launch a pilot within a functional group and the leader of that functional group looks at this and goes, that's never going to work because you have flaws here and here. So oftentimes strategy falls apart at the execution layer or can fall apart at the execution layer. So how did you work through that process of making sure that you don't lose momentum because there are gaps that the executive team didn't see or didn't recognize and you're still looking at moving this forward?
I can't do anything without communication. I tell my team, overly communicate if you have to. I would rather my organization get tired of hearing from my division versus not hearing from us at all. When I put a sprint together, when I identify a few individuals within the organization that I want to bring in and walk them through this particular initiative, the folks who I'm bringing in touch all pieces of the building, of the process. So I have folks in the field, I have folks at the corporate side, I have folks on the finance side. This is what we're trying to do. This is what it looks like. Give me your feedback, essentially like a focus group. And then from there, once I have that, once I've ironed out all of the kinks, if you will, then I will be able to roll it out. And there are, listen, not everyone is plugged into what you're trying to do. There are times where you have to say, listen, we need to make a change. What we have right now is not working. So let's put our energies behind creating something that does work. And maybe we need to do this in phases. Maybe we need to do this piece via piecemeal so we can get it off the ground. But the fact of the matter is what's been happening right now isn't working. So we can discuss why that isn't working till we're blue in the face, or we can put some action behind it and try to move the needle and make some change. And again, once the business begins to understand that and see that, okay, this is actually effective, then some of the doubters, if you come back and say, you know what? I had my reservations to this. I've seen this thing not working in many other places, but I give it to you that it's working here, or I appreciate you even trying to put something together, because over the past X amount of years, reason why we haven't had this is because no one wanted to do it or no one knew how to do it. So the fact that you're just tackling this is a wonderful step for us. It's just all about communication and buy-in to get to that point.
So I like your emphasis on communication and also creating feedback loops. Were there any best practices or key principles that you baked into your feedback loop process so that you made sure that you were being consistent and also mitigating the risk of missing some key elements as you're working on piloting and then expanding across the enterprise? Walk us through your process for creating that feedback loop.
Yeah, not working in a bubble is the best feedback loop that I could possibly, that I can share. We have a standing Tuesday leadership meeting. It's up to me to put my topic on that leadership meeting, to remind folks what we're doing, to bring my slides back up again, to show the business, this is where we are today. This is how we're moving the needle. This is what's coming down the pipe. This is the calendar. So it all comes back to open communication, overly communicating, and collaborating. I use the analogy, any grenades thrown in a meeting when someone doesn't know something or someone hasn't been brought in or someone hasn't been briefed. So by the time we get to the particular meeting, you had the pre-read in your inbox, read it before we have this specific meeting so we can truly discuss the nuts and bolts of what we're trying to do. That way we are all connected. And I also make myself available. I tell my business, I don't stand on formality. So if you need to reach me, call me, email me, text me. If something doesn't pass the sniff test, you need to let me know. Let's not wait until we get this off the ground and then you had a concern and it was never shared. As a leader, that's a gap that I'm going to call out in that perspective. So overly communicating, make sure that everyone is on the same page. We're all singing from the same song sheet and not doing the work in silos. I got to get everyone together. You're hearing it from me. One shot, one email, whatever the case may be. So we're all on the same page.
JV, great conversation so far. I think one of the things that I'm wondering is now that you got some legs underneath you, you've put some of these things into play, what's been the impact on the organization and what have you observed in terms of those retention and development outcomes that you were trying to drive?
So one of the things that I rolled out was an engagement survey. We hadn't had one in a while. I wanted to get a true pulse of the organization, what's working, what is not working. And within that survey, I spoke or asked questions that ties back to some of the initiatives that we either didn't have or that we're trying to do. So I have a clear voice from my employee base of things that are working and things that aren't working. And that provides me the ability to pivot wherever I need to pivot. In addition to that, I have my metrics. I can't do anything without putting together an ROI for the organization and the business. If something isn't working, I need to be able to pivot and make that change versus doing it for the sake of doing it. So with some of the initiatives that I put in place, I can see that my turnover numbers have come down. I can see my headhunter costs have come completely down. I can see that my engagement is up. I can see that the likability of the business is up. All of those things are true factors of the initiatives that we have put through, and it's real-time data that I can see in black and white.
One of the things that we're missing right now is the key principles or core elements of a framework that other leaders can rely upon when they're trying to build a development culture. So when you think about your experience here and your experience in building these sort of cultures throughout your career, what are the key things that people need to keep in mind to build that for their own organizations?
Great question. So a few things come to mind. The first thing, you can't do this without it, leadership commitment. You have to go to the boss of the business and walk her or him through the plan. And if they are not tied to it, it's not going to work, bottom line. You have to foster a growth mindset within your organization versus a fixed mindset. A growth mindset essentially shows that there is opportunity for the diversity of thought and new ideas to seep into the business. If folks have their arms crossed and are using the stance of, I'm just going to do it my way or the highway, it's not going to work. So you're going to have to exclude either those people from the business or exclude them from the process that you're trying to roll out. Continuous feedback. You have to have open dialogue. You have to create avenues for people to be able to communicate freely about what they're feeling and what's happening within the organization without fear of retribution of whatever that may be. So whether that's an 800 number or a suggestion box, whatever the case may be, but we have to create avenues for people to truly share what's happening with them within the organization. And I think the last piece is just change management and growth. It's okay to say that the way that we've structured isn't working. I think a lot of times folks get stuck there. If we've designed this business like this and it has gotten us to this particular point, it's okay to say maybe we need to redesign the organization to get us to the next level, to take us to the next horizon of business and then what that looks like. And unfortunately, we may have to move some people around, but it's okay to do that. So those four pillars, if you have that aligned, you can go far in whatever you're trying to do.
Great stuff, JV. If people want to continue the conversation, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yep. So you can reach out to me at josephf.garda@gmail.com. And I'm always available to take your messages.
Great stuff, JV. I appreciate you hanging out with us. When I think about this conversation, one of the biggest things that stands out to me is your comment about it doesn't have to be this way. And that should be one of the lenses that every leader applies to any organization that they're coming in. But that lens needs to be informed by what the people at the front lines at the execution layer are saying. You need to create feedback loops within your organization, and you need to be intentional about understanding from the folks at the front line, what are the things that get in the way of their success? Yeah. And that could be systems issues, that could be process issues, it could be any number of things, but you have to get that information from them to build the momentum necessary for change. Now, once you've done that, it's your job to go ahead and point out the ROI to the executive team and building buy-in at that layer. But you have to listen first before you act. And you have to understand that just because something is a particular way, it doesn't mean it has to stay that way if the people on the front lines are saying this is something that needs to be changed. So I think that's an important lesson that I drew from this conversation. I appreciate you sharing that with us. For those of you who have listened to this conversation, we appreciate you hanging out. Make sure you leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. If you haven't already done so, make sure you join our HR Impact community. You can find that at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And then tune in next time where we'll have another great leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that they've had that helped them build a high-performing team. Thanks for listening to this episode of Engaging Leadership. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find our community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.